Hello, Freddie Gray here, the deputy editor of The Spectator, trying to remind you that there is a big Spectator event. It's an Americano election special event with Nigel Farage, and it's being held at the Emanuel Centre in Westminster this Thursday, October the 24th. Tickets are selling out, and you can get yours by going to spectator.co.uk/book-your-tickets. Do it. Hello and welcome to The Americano Show, a series of discussions about American politics, power and prejudices. In each episode of this very brilliant show, we will bring you one very well-informed expert, guest, or possibly two, depending on how we're feeling, and together we will try and get to the bottom of what is going on in the United States. I'm delighted to be joined by The Spectator's very own James Heal, our political correspondent. And I should apologise to American or non-British listeners to the show, because this is going to be quite a Limey-centric edition of the podcast, because we're going to be talking about the Labour Party in Britain and the American election. There has been a big fuss in recent days over the fact that the Labour Party or Labour Party activists are meant to be going, we don't really know whether it's actually happening or not, are meant to be going, about 100 volunteers are meant to be going to help canvass for Kamala Harris, which the right, Elon Musk, Nigel Farage and others have decried as election interference. And then last night, to make this story into a bigger drama, the Trump campaign announced that it has filed a federal complaint about the Labour Party doing this on the grounds that it is election interference.
Yes.
Keir Starmer, flying to Samoa, was grilled about this, the Prime Minister, and he seemed a bit baffled and a bit sort of grumpy that he was being asked about it, because he said, oh, they're volunteers, as far as I know, it's not a big deal. And the line from Labour has very much been, this is a kind of voluntary scheme, it's being blown massively out of proportion. Do Labour have a point when they say that, or does the Trump campaign have a point when they say it's election interference?
Sure. So there's two real issues here. I mean, one is about the politics and the other about the legality. So the claim by the Trump campaign is that potentially there's a breach of American election law in terms of, can you have foreign staff coming over or being paid to campaign on the behalf of an American political party? Labour's response to that in the UK is to say these guys weren't paid. They were doing it of their own vacation, holiday time. They went off and chose to do that. And if they want to get their kicks that way, and these people work in politics full time and want to spend their holidays, why, what's wrong with that? And you know, there's always been a tradition in Britain of Brits going over to America, campaigning. We all love a corporate jolly. Every sector loves them. And for politicos, they want to go and campaign. And the sister party to the Labour government is the Democrats in America. And so there've been lots of close cooperation. Famously in the 1990s, there was lots of ideas and personnel change between Bill Clinton and Tony Blair. They were part of the third wave of British politics and American politics and wanted to sort of champion similar ideas on the economy and social issues. The changed variable, I think, this time is about Donald Trump. And Donald Trump is not a conventional presidential candidate. We've seen this repeatedly. For instance, when there was the leaked cables from the British Embassy in Washington, Kim Darroch was the ambassador, and some presidents, for instance, would have just ignored this, brushed it off, and said there's issues around the leaking. Donald Trump, of course, blew this up into a Twitter row, and Kim Darroch was forced out as British ambassador. So in terms of the legality of it, I think it's a sort of grey area which they're currently discussing, is have they breached the electoral law or not? I've seen conflicting opinions. I think the real story about this is politics, which is that why would you want a bunch of limeys going over there and campaigning for a political opponent? And so Donald Trump's team is saying this is an issue, it's outrage. And I think it's an appealing to an American political audience, a domestic political audience. And hence why that press release, which appeared in all our inbox this morning, mentioned the Battle of Yorktown. It was very much sort of, they're coming over here, they're trying to campaign for the Kamala Harris lot. And I did enjoy the fact they misspelt the word Britain in their press release as well.
Yeah, that's the real spirit of revolution. It's
absolutely
not even to spell it right. I think, I mean, yes, it obviously taps into a kind of latent American sense that British people come over and tell them what to do. And that's a sort of a founding thought of America.
And famously, of course, the liberal newspaper here in London, The Guardian, wrote and organised a campaign of letter writing to Americans in Ohio in a crucial swing district, saying, urging them to vote for the John Kerry campaign to stop Bush winning re-election. And of course, when the returns came in, turns out that that county went even more Republican than the rest of the ones in Ohio because people were so outraged by this attempt to interfere and gerrymander.
Yeah, I remember that. That was hilarious.
Yeah, and so
the responses from some, because it was all, a lot of it was online, the responses online from people in Ohio were absolutely wonderful.
Like, stick your noses out, you know, and so The Guardian won it for George Bush.
Well, yes, and so that's, I suppose, ties into your point that it's a win for the Republican Party because the bigger they can turn this into an outrage, the more people will think, I want to vote for Donald Trump.
And of course, I think in terms of the Brits, we think of Love Actually. And, you know, there's that famous scene where Hugh Grant, as the Prime Minister, tells the US President that we're not going to be kicked around by him anymore, etc. This is similar to that. You know, Donald Trump is appealing to the patriotism of Americans, middle Americans, who must resent being told, you know, or getting people coming over campaigning. I also think the original story came about because one Labour staff member, the head of operations, was so stupid as to put a LinkedIn post up. And I think it's worth quoting just the tone of it. Let's show the Democrats how to win the elections, says the British Labour Party, which famously has a proud history of pulling defeat from the jaws of victory for 124 years. So the original post said, I have nearly 100 Labour Party staff, current and former, going to the US in the next few weeks, heading to North Carolina, Nevada, Pennsylvania and Virginia. And this was posted on Twitter by an anonymous account. And then it blew up and it got seized upon by Elon Musk. And naturally, the Trump campaign have piled in on this because they can smell blood on it.
That's an interesting part of it, actually, is that the Labour people thinking that they are part of some international centre-left victory, some movement that is happening that perhaps we're not really picking up on. And it was certainly very interesting that the Labour Party, before the general election in Britain, were keen to make warm noises with Donald Trump and to look as though they were statesmanlike. David Lammy met J.D. Vance, had made overtures to Trump World, so did Starmer. Starmer met Trump too. And then Harris replaced Biden, and there was Kamala mania over the summer. Labour won the election. Labour people went over to the convention in Chicago. And I went to an event, actually, in Chicago, where a couple of Labour MPs were sort of telling the American centre-left how to win, how the centre-left can defeat populism. And now, with the story breaking and with Trump sort of, it seems, getting slightly ahead in the polls, certainly he has the momentum at the moment, they're having to reverse ferret once more. So Labour doesn't really know what it's doing.
I think it shows the tensions within the Labour Party, which is that those in high office, ministers, know they have to work with Donald Trump if he wins, and that he will be a huge factor in the success or potential failure of this Labour government. For instance, his policy on tariffs and trade, what that will do, issues around European cooperation and security, and the Baltic, for instance, in Ukraine, what happens there. At the same time, a lot of its activists clearly loathe Donald Trump. He is an anathema to their politics. He is a particularly polarising Republican figure for a party that's never taken much kindly to Republican figures. So this is the whole issue. And we had today in the House of Commons in Westminster, the leader of the Scottish National Party stood up and asked the Deputy Prime Minister if she would congratulate all those Labour workers who've given up their time to go and come in America. And it puts the Labour Party in a very difficult position because its voters loathe Mr. Trump, but they also have to work with him. They know the political reality. So Labour is in a bind, and their domestic political enemies will not try to hold back as they try and push and pull Labour and show, hang on a sec, something like half the cabinet have previously criticised Donald Trump during his first presidential term, back when they were a million miles from power. And then, of course, Keir Starmer came in and it's changed everything. But it shows the difficulty, which is that we all know the Labour Party really does not like Donald Trump, and yet they have to work with him because in high office, because the US-UK strategic relationship is fundamental to both of our countries standing in the world.
One thing that I think people on the political right get wrong about this story, and you may disagree, is that they say, well, you know, Donald Trump famously holds a grudge and he'll really be thinking about this. I think we as Brits tend to always exaggerate how much Donald Trump actually cares and that he may hold a grudge if there's an edge in it for him to hold a grudge. But in terms of diplomacy, he's very transactional.
Yes.
And I'm sure after a friendly meeting, another friendly meeting with Keir Starmer, if he is elected, he will say what a great guy he thinks Keir Starmer is and what a good relationship they have.
Yes, it's interesting. I mean, I interviewed Woody Johnson, who was Trump's man in London in the first term and is tipped by many people to return. And he said, well, we have long memories. People won't forget these comments, etc. As you say, Freddie, I mean, Trump is someone who is very able to kind of recycle through people and ideas. And as I say, fundamentally, because the US and UK have so many strategic interests, this is why the partnership has endured for 75, 80 years, because we just have more need to talk to each other. Obviously, we have fully integrated intelligence networks together in terms of communication sharing, GCHQ, etc. So I think it will endure. It is just, I would say, suboptimal to get off to a start like this when so much time and effort and energy has been invested by David Lammy in trying to make up for his past tweets criticizing Trump and really bigging up JD Vance. So I suspect you're right in that sense, in that the UK will be able to overcome the difficulties. It just seems inadvisable given how much work they've gone to try and convince the Trump campaign that they're sort of honest brokers and all of this. And now they've ended up in a row where they clearly aren't.
Great use of the word suboptimal there, by the way. I wonder about, we did a cover, a Spectator cover a couple of weeks ago now about Labour looking to China.
Yes.
And certainly when Trump was president and Mike Pompeo was Secretary of State, there was a kind of English-speaking world attempt to pull away from China a bit strategically. And it was rather sort of uncomfortable in London, but Westminster SW1 sort of went along with it to a certain extent. If Trump is re-elected and something similar happens the same process happens, do you think Labour will handle it very differently to the way the Conservatives handled that?
So there's a couple of competing instincts within Labour, one of which is a genuine concern for human rights, which obviously, famously, the Tony Blair government promised an ethical foreign policy. We can debate whether that actually turned out to be the case in the Middle East, etc. So that led to previously in Keir Starmer's early leadership, Labour were very much outflanking the Conservatives on sign of scepticism. They called for what happened in Xinjiang to be classified as a genocide. They were very much striking a more hawkish position. And actually, they were the one pulling Boris Johnson's government in a more conservative, in a more hardline direction. Obviously, there was the issue around Huawei at that point. But now, of course, since then, Labour have now become the party of government. They've already suggested they won't try and claim that what happened in Xinjiang toward the Uyghur Muslims was a genocide. Because that would have a whole chain of consequences for our trade relationship with China in terms of if the UK government claims the genocide has happened, what that therefore means. And their new priority now is economic growth. And you saw this with the investment summit last week in London, big investment summit, Elton John played and all these businesses, etc. They are desperate for money. And this is why David Lammy is going to China. I thought it was a poorly timed, poorly executed, poorly explained trip. Really bizarre. Labour are doing this China audit of all the government policies in London departments. And so to go before that was complete does suggest to me that they're basically willing to put economic growth or perceived economic growth first. Now, that being said, as we saw from America and how London sort of followed in what America was doing between 2017 and 2021, ultimately, if it comes down to Beijing or Washington, Britain will choose Washington because that's where all our strategic interest is. The question is about pace and scope and whether we go kicking our heels, etc. And really, if they're going to come at the cost of economic sanctions as well.
I would I'd agree with all that. I'd also add, and I'd like to know your view on this, that I think the power of Trump hatred internationally is waning. Mm. It's still actually pretty strong in large parts of America. But I think that you have nothing like the antipathy towards Donald Trump that you had between 2016 and 2020. Perhaps that's because he has been president and the world didn't end. Mm. Perhaps that's because people are changing. Since the pandemic, people are changing the way they look at politics and think about politics, and they're more mistrustful of the elites that Donald Trump seems to despise.
I think there's also a sense, perhaps, that the alternative has been tried. You know, there was a sense in certain quarters that Trump was an aberration and the normal order, the kind of pre-2008 sensible grown-ups, West Wing, all in capital letters.
Normalcy, yeah, to use the horrible word.
We're back, you know, the adults are back in the room. And yet actually what we've seen on both sides of the Atlantic is the status quo repeatedly coming under challenge, both internally and externally. Around the world, obviously, you've got a more militant China, you've got Russia and Ukraine, and things such as global supply chains have increasingly become more of a concern. Things that we saw with the ship in the Suez Canal, for instance, as a very reminder of COVID, etc. All the ups and downs in a much more uncertain world, there is, I think, Trump has become a much more recognisable figure in so many of the movements we see abroad around the world. So I think there's that to consider. And also, of course, I think you've got the Democrats who are fairly discredited. And that, I think, is going to be something that all incumbents struggle with. And the challenge that Keir Starmer and Labour needs to realise is that just changing the rosette in here in this country from the Conservative blue to Labour red will not solve the underlying economic issues that Trump's been talking about for a long time, and the fact that the global economic order is increasingly under strain. You've got legitimate issues he's highlighted, such as the Chinese practice of dumping materials in order to destroy a Western economy, for instance, in steel, and therefore undercutting that and making them reliant on Chinese goods. Those, so I think there's a degree around issues. The opponents have been discredited, and I think what he represented was far less a break, perhaps, than an increasing portent of what is to come in the future.
We all know that the adults are rubbish. Is that what you're saying?
I would say that some of the adults tend to immature with age.
James Hill, thank you very much for coming on to Americano.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for listening to that episode of The Americano Show. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please leave rave reviews on whatever platform you listen to it on. I would like to thank, of course, my brilliant producer, Natasha Farrows. Thanks again for listening. All the best.